We want to introduce the book of Joshua by just talking about how Joshua fits in the Bible, and that's where we're going to start tonight. Where does the Bible begin? Well, since Joshua deals with geography, he talks about the promised land. Where's this promised land? Where is this promised land that Joshua takes the Jews when they leave the land of Egypt? Where is that promised land? Well, let me first ask you in your mind to look on that map and see if you can figure out where the Garden of Eden is. You can just guess where it is, something like that. And we're not really exactly sure. But if I tell you, there are two rivers in the Bible, the Tigris and the Euphrates. And I think if you look on the handout map that you've got, you'll be able to see it better there. Where is the Garden of Eden? That's where it all started. Well, we know where the rivers are. And that is perhaps the location of the Garden of Eden. Nobody knows where it is. So if you want to mark that on that, just so you'll have some idea there and put question marks all the way around it, because we don't know exactly where it is. We know the names of the rivers, and those two rivers that are on the handout, I cannot even see them on the screen here, but the rivers that are there on your map, up, let me see if I can figure out this, up in this area, right up in there, right up in, well, down more in this area is, there we go, there's the rivers, I can see them now. Down in that area is perhaps the location of the Garden of Eden. Now, you've only got four maps, and so when I ask you to locate the next place, you probably want to put it on the first map, and when the first map gets pretty full, then take the second map and then flip it over to maps 3 and 4. I don't know how to do this otherwise, but that's where it is. Now, after you've got the creation of the world, you've got the Garden of Eden. We know the river's where it's found. What happens after that? Geographically, what happens after that? The next thing that happens after that is Noah. You got Adam and Eve, and then you got to go 10 generations, and you get to Noah. Is there a geographical place associated with Is there a geographical place associated with, well, I got the wrong button. Is there a geographical place associated with Noah? Yep. There's the mountains of Ararat. Where are they? Nobody. Well, we know generally where they are. We often say Mount Ararat. But it's really in the plural. So there's a range of mountains up there. You think about the Alps or the Smokies or something like that. And they're up in the Turkey, and they're just almost up right at the very top of your map there. So they're up somewhere up in this area. I believe the next slide, there's an arrow there that points up perhaps to where they were. That's interesting in and of itself. Let me ask you. What country is this right down in here? You know anything about the modern names of this area here where these rivers are? Do you know what country that is? If you wanted to go over to where the Garden of Eden was, where would you go? What's the name of that? That's Iraq. That's exactly where it is. And so some of our members, former members that served in the military in Iraq, they went up and they went over there and they got to another place that was the beginning of languages, geographical place, Genesis chapter 11, Babel. Babel. Now, Babel is the original site of a city that we know very much later in the Bible. That's Babylon, Babylonian captivity. We talk a lot about the Babylonian captivity. So where are we going to locate? Where Babel is down there on that lower side. That's that lower river. That's where they tried to build the tower that would reach up into heaven. So it gives you some idea of this. A lot of this introduction study tonight is going to be geographical. I personally love geography, and I hope that you do. Locating things on map and measuring the distance, you know, when you got a bar graph down at the bottom, see how far it is to go from one place to another. So you get to the Tower of Babel. That's where God confuses the language. And then you've got Abraham. There are several geographical places associated with Abraham. There's Ur of the Chaldees. Anybody need? I've got a few more copies. Joe, you and Marion want one each. Anybody else need one? So you've got Ur of the Chaldees. Where on earth is Ur? Well, Ur is down there on that same river, right down in that area is where Ur was. I saw one map that said that this water place that was here used to extend right up, almost up to the city of Ur. And I only saw that on one map, but that's rather interesting. You think about the delta of the Mississippi and how it just continues to make Louisiana a little bit longer state and everything. And so at one time, Ur was an ocean front, but the delta was not nearly as big as it is as it is now in the modern map. So somewhere on that Euphrates River is where Ur was, and obviously it's where Babylon also later was. Abraham, God comes to Abraham and says, Abraham, I want you to leave Ur, and I want you to go up to a place called Haran. And so you can locate Haran up, he told him to leave Ur and said, go to a place that I'll show you. And so he went first up to Haran. Now you look on that map, you know, that distance doesn't look very long at all. It's several hundred miles, maybe as much as 600 or 700 miles journey just to get from Ur all the way up to where Haran is. So when God says to Abraham, I want you to leave, I want you to leave Ur and go to a land that I will show you. The first place he went all the way up to where Haran was. And he stayed there until his father died. And then God came to him and he said, Abraham, I want you to go to leave Haran and I want you to go down into the land that I'm going to give to your descendants. And the geographical place is the town of Bethel. Anytime you see in a Hebrew name the letters E-L, that's one of the names of God. And so there are lots of characters in the Bible who have E-L in their name. Can you think of any? You have to speak out real loud. Samuel, very one David preached about. Ask of God. El, any other ELs in the Bible? Who? Joel. Daniel, God is my judge. Yeah, I guess my guess is Joel is Jehovah is my God. I don't know that absolutely. Makes good sense to me. Any other ELs in the Bible? Pearl L, okay. Pearl's a member here in case you don't know that. And she doesn't exactly fit in this EL, but she ought to, okay. Well, I got Pearl ends in an EL too, doesn't it? I mean, any other L's in the Bible?
Ezekiel.
Who? Ezekiel. Any other L's in the Bible? Who? Daniel, who'd you say? Gabriel. There's a lot of L's in the Bible, aren't they? Can you think of any Old Testament prophets? I'm saying all the books, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, you know. They did not write a book. They raised people from the dead. They called down fire from heaven to light the sacrifice that was there. Remember who that was? It doesn't end in EL. It starts with who is that? Elijah. And the one who took his place was? Elisha. And what did Jesus... Oh no, who was the old man, the old preacher that they brought the weaned baby to raise? All right, that's Eli. What did Jesus say on the cross? Eli, my God, why have you forsaken me? So it's a very, very common name. You read it in the Bible and you need to sort of train yourself to look at it and then look in a Bible dictionary. Wonder why this person has this name in the Bible. And by the way, the ending of in the English names in the Bible that end I-A-H, that's another reference to God. And so, you've got, I was trying to think of who, of some, IAH, some of the kings, their names end in IAH and things of that nature. So it's a very common name. And so they were given those names. By the way, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they went over into Babylon, they had names that had either IAH in it or EL in their name. And Nebuchadnezzar said, there's no way we're going to let these characters have these names. So he gives them pagan names, and we know they're pagan names. We don't even know their Jewish names. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had a Jewish name when they got over there. And Nebuchadnezzar said, you're not going to bring the name of God over here to Babylon. We're going to change your name. And he even renamed Daniel. He gave Daniel, his name was Belteshazzar. And so he was given that name. So that's Bethel. Bethel is first mentioned in the Bible in connection with anyone. Well, is with Abraham. But the name was given to that particular location because of a man who had a dream. And he saw a ladder that went up into heaven. That's Jacob. Do any of you remember string art, where you would take strings and make Jacob ladders? Is that only an Alabama thing that you learned to do? Put it on you. Could you do it, Pat? Do you think you could remember how to do it right now and everything? And you had to do all sort of complication maneuver. And when you finished it up and turned that thing right, the last movement is this way, and you got Jacob's ladder that goes all the way from earth to heaven. I don't know why I told you that, and the fact that I can still do it. Anyway, you've got to. And when Jacob saw that, here's the thing that went from where he laid that stone there for his pillow and had that dream, and he saw that dream going up into heaven. He says, this is Bethel. And Beth in Hebrew means house. House of God. Bethel. You see that? And so you got all the Beths in the Bible. Where was Jesus born? Bethlehem. And there are a lot of Beths in the Bible. And in Hebrew, it means... So Abraham leaves Haran and goes down into that promised land. Now, when Abraham gets down into that promised land, God begins to make some promises to him. In the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. So now Abraham gets down to that land. He left Ur of the Chaldees. He's over there in Palestine, over there in Canaan, over in that part of the world. And the God of heaven says to Abraham, this is your land. You've left Ur, and now you're over here. And two or three times in those early chapters in Genesis, he says, you walk all over this land. Every place you step, every place your footsteps, I'm going to give you this land. That's remarkable. Can you imagine Abraham walking all over that land and saying, this is where my family's going to live. I'm going to give this land, and I'm going to give it to your descendants. And so that promise that was made to Abraham concerned a place called the River of Egypt. And we've indicated on the map where that River of Egypt is. And in the darkened part of that screen, you can see the boundaries. Down in the lower left-hand corner, there's a little tributary there. You can see that tributary. That's called the River of Egypt. That's not the Nile River. It's a smaller river, and it was called the River of Egypt. And it goes from there all the way up to the Euphrates River. And so God says, this is going to be your land. Now, this relates to Joshua, doesn't it? God promised to give this land. And that's why we spent time looking at this matter of Bible geography, so that we'll have some understanding of the importance of Joshua going in there and capturing that promised land. Well, God makes this promise to Abraham, and there's a threefold part to the promises God made to Abraham. And this is important. If you want to be a Bible student, you need to know that God comes to Abraham. Genesis chapter 12, And he says, Abraham, I'm going to make of you a great nation. Now, when that promise is first made to Abraham, he doesn't have any children at all. Doesn't have any children. In fact, the Bible describes him in that period of his life or shortly thereafter that he and Sarah both were past the age of having children. That's remarkable. I'm going to make a great nation of you. And then he says, I'll make a great nation of you, and I'm going to put this great nation in a great land. Think about a great nation. He uses two figures of speech that Abraham, your descendants will be like what? Two things that are occur naturally out in the world. What? Like the sand by the seashore. Would you, next time you go to the beach, pick up just a handful. Don't get a big one. Just pick up some sand and count how many grains of sand you got in your hand. I've done that. Don't do it. It will drive you insane. And the only way is to pull them off, and then you'll think, did I pull off one or two or something like that? It's impossible to number them. And then he says, the other figure of speech is what? Stars of heaven. And I think it's ironic that to the human eye you can see about 3,000 stars, but you know, as the earth rotates at night, those stars keep moving all over the place. Now, did I count that one or not count the other one? And so I'm going to make of you a great nation. And he said, I'm going to give that great nation a great land. And then he says, and then someday I'm going to send a great Savior. Now, the word in Genesis is the word seed, S-E-E-D. That I'm going to send in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now, the Bible makes an interesting observation in Galatians chapter 3, verse 16. When you think of the seed of Abraham, you could think of the Jewish nation, the descendants of Abraham. That's not it. In the Hebrew, that's not the way it is. It is singular. Not your descendants, with an S on the end, but in your descendant, singular. In your seed, not seeds, I'm going to bless all mankind. And that seed promised to Abraham is repeated not only to Abraham, but to Isaac and to Jacob. And so, you know, in Genesis, what, chapter 26, verse 14, and to Isaac, same promises made, a great nation and a great land. And in your seed, a great Savior. Genesis chapter 28:14, must be 26:4. Chapter 28, he says to Jacob. This, by the way, is after Jacob sees Jacob's ladder. He's going to make all of these things happen. And so he says to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, I'm going to give you all of this land, and it will all be yours. And there's going to be a great nation. Now you see, Abraham has another son other than Isaac. That's Ishmael. What religious group claims to trace their lineage all the way back to Ishmael? The Muslims. Do you understand why they're fighting over Jerusalem and why there's all of this conflict that there is over there? Because the Muslims say, well, Abraham had another son named Ishmael, and we're descendants of Ishmael. And so the blessing does not come through Isaac, it comes through Ishmael. Now, the Lord says, no, not Ishmael, Isaac. And so that's a part of that land and that ongoing warfare that in your lifetime, I guess even the lifetime of the oldest person in here, there's been conflict between the Jews and the Arabs over there, over that land. 1948, into the Second World War, the United Nations went in, and there were Arabs living on the west bank of the Jordan, and they went in there and moved all the Arabs out and allowed the Jews to come in. And the Arabs are saying, that's our land. You've taken our land away from us. And You know, there's almost some legitimacy in what they're saying. If you become an Arab, you can understand some of the things that are transpiring there. Now, what's happening there has nothing to do with Bible prophecy. But God made that promise to Abraham, great nation, great land, great Savior. Makes the same promise to his son Isaac. Does Isaac have more than one child? Who are Isaac? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Jacob have any relatives?
Esau.
Jacob and who?
Esau.
Jacob and Esau. Oh. It usually came through the oldest child, did it? Did it not? To the firstborn son, there was the right of birth. You remember? Do you remember that time when Esau was hungry? Jacob had I say a bowl of beans. It was more like stew or something like that. And he was eating it. And so Esau wanted it. And Jacob says, I'll give you this if you'll give me your right of birth. Now, God had already said it's going to come through Jacob. And so, you know, even before those boys were born, God could look ahead and see it's going to come through Jacob. But he sold the birthright. The whole lineage could have come the other way, except, you know, God understood everything and worked it out in his own way. Now, Jacob has another name, and that's why we've got it up there on the screen. I would give anything if at the West Huntsville Church of Christ, somebody had hit me in the back of the head when I was about 7 years of age and said, Jacob's other name is Israel. In my mind, I thought there's the Jewish nation, there's the children of Israel. And when I said children of Israel, the Israelites, I never thought of Jacob. You know, the Israelis. You know what the Israelis are? They're Jacobies. You know, the children of Israel are the children of Jacob. And for some reason, I'm sure they taught me that. I mean, I never learned it. If they taught it, I never grabbed a hold of it. And so when you start reading about the children of Israel, well, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are in the promised land, but they're not always in the promised land. And so, and I put that up there for a reason, the Jacobites moved down to the land of Egypt. Who's that? Remember the story about Joseph? They moved down there into the land of Egypt. And so Joseph is down there because of 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. Then all of the descendants, the entire family of Jacob, all the Israelites move down to the land. Only 70 of them, but they move down into Egypt. And they're there in Egypt. I'm assuming you know where Egypt is, right down in this area, right in there. They moved down there. In fact, they asked for they were shepherds, they were separated from the Egyptians because the Egyptians, didn't like sheep and goats. And so they worshiped the calves. They were cattlemen. It's the cowboys and the shepherds, I guess. And so they moved over, and they got some very fertile land over there, the land of Goshen, up in that where that Nile River on the map. You'll see, I guess the Nile River is there, and there's a very fertile area up there called Goshen. And they got over there, and they flourished, and they flourished, and they flourished. And they're there for 430 years. Now, in the interim, they're made slaves. And so now, after 430 years, Moses comes and he leads them from... He leads them down to Mount Sinai. And so right down in that area, right down on that little delta area, delta-looking shape place there, is Mount Sinai. So the Israelites, they leave the land because of the plagues. They come across the Red Sea, and they come right down into this area to Mount Sinai. They're headed to the promised land. God said, I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that you'd have this land, and now you're going to be able to go back and to get this promised land. Well, from Mount Sinai, they go up to a place called Kadesh, in some places, without the hyphenated, without the latter part of that, or Kadesh Barnea was the name of the place. So they spend 1 year at Mount Sinai. And then from Mount Sinai up to this edge right here. See, here's that promised land that God said you're going to have. They get right here on the edge of the promised land at a place called Kadesh Barnea. It's only 11 days to get from Mount Sinai. Now, they're 1 year at Mount Sinai. Four things happen at Mount Sinai. There's the golden calf. There's the Ten Commandments. There's the numbering of the people. Count how many people were there. Wonder in which book of the Bible I'd read about the numbers of the people. Good, all right, in the book of Numbers. That's where I would read that. So whenever they leave the land of Egypt, and how many are they there in the... How many men of war above 20? Anybody know exactly how many people came out of the land of Egypt? Everybody just sits around and looks back at Chuck. Chuck's our mathematician back here, and I don't even have to remember that. Chuck, how many? 603,550 men of war. Not counting the Levites, the 12 sons of Jacob become the 12 tribes of Israel. And so the 12 tribes of Israel leave and they've got an army of 600,000. That's a massive number of men. Every man above 20 able to fight was a part of that army. So they're there in that land, and four things happen. They golden calf, they get the Ten Commandments, they number the people, and the fourth thing they do is to build the tabernacle. So they spend down here at Mount Sinai, down in this area, and then it's an 11 days journey to get up here to the promised land. And that 11 days journey takes 40 years. Because when they got up here to the edge of the promised land, when they got to this place called Kadesh Barnea, they sent the spies out. They went in and saw that land and sent out 12 spies, and the spies came back and said, this place is a land flowing with milk and honey. Never seen anything. In fact, they brought back one cluster of grapes, and it was so big, they put it on a pole, and two men had to carry the cluster of grapes. It was a land that flowed with milk and honey. Just that very description of that one cluster of grapes shows you how fertile that land was. But they said, we cannot do it. And so God said, all right, if you say you cannot do it, then you're not going to be able to go into that land. And so they go from Kadesh Barnea to Kadesh Barnea. And it takes 40 years. And so they're down in that wilderness, and they visit about 40 places in 40 years. When I grew up in Sunday school, the wilderness wandered. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. And I thought, that's amazing. And so I saw them every morning getting up and packing up. You know, okay, guys, we've unpacked. We got our tent set up. It's time for us to wander. And they'd wander around. But they moved from place to place. And the Bible names all 40 of those places. Usually the names are just given to places with perhaps indicating what happened that when they were there. 40 years later, after wandering around here in this wilderness all of that time, they come back to Kadesh Barnea. And once they get back, when they get back to Kadesh Barnea, these are the things that happen. First of all, Miriam dies at Kadesh Barnea. Remember Miriam, Moses' older sister? They're in the last year of Moses' life. And so Miriam dies. And then the Jews wanted to go from here Just come right over here up in this area and go into the promised land. Well, they've got some relatives there, the Amorites and the Moabites. They're the cousins of the Jews. Their descendants are also Arabs. Some of the Muslims claim, you know, they said that's us. That's where we come from. Now, where does Ammon and Moab come from? How are they cousins? And whoever said Lot, you said it just right. After God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot flees from Sodom and Gomorrah. His wife turns into a what? Pillar of salt. And so Lot has no wife, and so his daughters get him drunk, and one of the daughters gets pregnant. The very next night, they get him drunk again, and another daughter sleeps with him, and they have children. They name one of the children Moab, and the other Ammon. And they're cousins in that sense, in the loosest sense of cousin. And you would have thought that they would have gladly allowed the Jews just to circumvent the Dead Sea and come right up there and go into the promised land. Not allowed to do it. So what they have to do is they have to come all the way down, because that's where the Ammonites and the Moabites live, and they have to come all the way down to this other arm of the Red Sea and then come right back up and go back up to the west side. And so the other thing that happens up there is Aaron dies. Mount Hor is a little map, is right up in that area, and that's where Aaron dies. So now, everybody, all the 603,000, they're all going to die. So Aaron's going to die, and Miriam's going to die. And so they go from here right up to Mount Nebo. And Nebo's just a mountain peak, and I probably should have put more dots and spaces on the map that I handed out. But they come up just sort of the northern end of the Dead Sea that's there. And Moses climbs to Mount Nebo and looks over into the promised land. It's an amazing thing what transpires. Now then, before Moses dies, they've gone up and they've captured all of this land on the east bank of the Jordan River. There's the Jordan River right up in that area. They capture all of this land that is there. And so they capture all of that land, and then Moses goes to Mount Nebo, and Moses dies. What happens after that? After you get to all of this, here the Bible says, Moses, Deuteronomy chapter 34, Moses was 120 years old when he died, and his eyes were unlike Dan. His eyes were not dimmed, 120 years of age. It was a picture of health. He was a strong statue and everything. And so he stands on Mount Sinai, and from Mount Sinai, you could stand and look from that mount on a clear day and see all the way over to the Mediterranean Sea. Moses saw all of this promised land. Remember, give you the land from the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates. He could stand on Mount Nebo and look all the way over and see the Mediterranean Sea. And he got to see it. And just in passing, as a child, I used to get mad at God for not letting him go into the promised land. I didn't verbalize it, but I thought, man, he served God all that, and then God wouldn't let him go in. Listen, he'd had 40 years of trouble with those people. God did him a favor by letting him die. Sometimes, you know, we think so physically, but are you aware that Moses did go into the promised land? When Jesus came at the Mount of Transfiguration, who was with Moses? I gave you that one away. Who was with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration? Moses and Elijah. The law and the prophets were there on the top of that mountain. Is that the first veil? Second veil. Well, let's see. Those last verses of Deuteronomy says that Moses had laid his hands on Joshua. Joshua takes Moses' place. And so when Moses dies here at Mount Nebo, they got across the Jordan River. Get across the Jordan River, you got Jericho. You've got all of that land, and what we're going to study for the next 10 weeks is to study the book of Joshua and learn about the battles that were fought and some of the things that were there, some amazing characters that are there. I hope this helps. I hope you've got some idea of why this is so important. God promised them that land through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and now 430 years, they're going to go in and take that promised land. Really, 470 years, because you've got to add the 40 years in the wilderness. Nearly 500 years have transpired, and then God gives them that land. How does He give them? He allows the Joshua to lead them in. How many of the 603,000 made it into the promised land? Two. Now, here's an interesting question. How many Jews, as far as we know, how many Jews died in battle in taking the promised land? We'll find that out next week. Is that okay? We'll find that out next week. Okay.